This podcast is brought to you by Knowledge at Wharton.
I'd like to welcome Justin Riley to Knowledge at Wharton. And Justin is head of customer experience innovation for Verizon Fios. And he's speaking today at the Mac conference, which is the title of their conference is Emerging Innovation Leadership Challenges for Global Firms. You did just speak, and I'd like you, if you could just give us like a short synopsis of what you said to the group.
That would be great. It's wonderful to be here. So I spend a lot of time talking about how we think about innovating inside of a big company. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, so this is the first time I've worked inside of a large company, and I chose a Fortune 14, I guess, to be my first time. Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot about Generation Z trends, about how we think about becoming a product company, how we shift organizational structures, what it takes, in our opinion, to keep up with emerging tech, and then how we're solving some really key problems in our business as we face the reality of being disrupted from a lot of different angles, right? I mean, you think about the genesis of Verizon, we're really the phone company.
Right.
And now playing in everything from fiber to media to artificial intelligence. And those things are kind of happening at scale all over the world. So it's an exciting place to be. There's a lot of change, and it's great to be here today.
So when it comes to all of those changes you just described, you're, of course, focused on customer service. Maybe you could just give us some idea of what the key challenges are for Verizon and Fios in those areas.
Yeah, that's fair.
In that area, yes.
Yeah, so I have responsibility for our core innovation products, for everything that touches the customer outside of our core TV and fiber products.
What are some of the most innovative things in that category you just described, for example, so people know what we're talking about?
Yeah, so I have an entire group focused on artificial intelligence and machine learning, mostly right now that manifests itself in a conversational UI experience, which—
Is that is a chat box?
Effectually known as a chat bot,
okay.
Right? So probably the most consumer-facing thing that is in production, right, mm-hmm. that customers are mm-hmm. playing with right now is a chatbot experience mm-hmm. That we have in Facebook Messenger that will be in our native application next month. Mm-hmm. And it solves every problem from answering the question of what's on tonight, getting TV recommendations, to being able to reset your router to know where your tech is, to pay
that's
your bill,
really
et cetera.
Well, that's interesting. So tell me more about AI and machine learning. Of course, we just actually published a story within the last week called AI is the New Electricity. Mm-hmm. And AI is going to change so many things. There's also a lot of hype around it. So it's like trying to separate fact from hopes and dreams. And a lot of those hopes and dreams will become reality one day. It's just that when you focus on, let's say, the next 2 years, which is the things that are actually going to happen, mm-hmm. what do you have coming up in that kind of time frame that would be interesting for people to know about?
Yeah, I think
two or 3 years, whatever you
want. Yeah, no, absolutely. So yeah. I think there's a couple problems with what's going on with AI right now is that people are referring to things that aren't core machine learning, neural networks, or what would be referred to affectionately as artificial intelligence, mm-hmm. right? So basic right. linear decision trees, basic data analytics, certainly building blocks towards artificial intelligence. But when folks kind of flood the market with we are an AI company or mm-hmm. we are doing AI, it becomes really hard to differentiate between those things.
Right. I mean, a calculator in a way is artificial intelligence.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Especially if it remembers something that you did.
Right.
Right. Uh-huh. So I think that the most interesting trends in AI are going to be supervised learning, which is a little bit further along and much further along than unsupervised learning, right? So the ability for you to make a couple interactions with a piece of technology as a human, for that machine to learn what you're doing, but to be kind of taught that from an employee or a product manager or a machine learning engineer on the other side. So an example of that for us is if during the, we had a chatbot interaction during the Mayweather fight, Money Mayweather and McGregor, right? Mm-hmm. And so over time, when people were coming into the chatbot to purchase the fight, they would use words that were MMA slang, for lack mm-hmm. of a better term. And because we had a natural language processing, understanding, and generation interaction, as well as a neural network mm-hmm. behind it, the bot, with a little bit of supervision from a machine learning engineer, mm-hmm. learned those terms quicker. Mm-hmm. So when the next person came in, mm-hmm. they knew that this type of language meant show this result, give this experience. That, I think, is going to be the most interesting set of interactions for any brand going forward. But it's fundamental to giving someone an experience where they can give you that type of data, right? And then the second thing is whether you have the right data, it's organized in the right way, and then you can build learning algorithms based off of it.
So for the example you just gave, that's a relatively narrow area. So are you suggesting like that's the kind of thing that can work really well when you have there's four walls around it. You were just talking about this specific thing versus the universe of knowledge and that sort of thing, that that AI and machine learning can function very well in that smaller world.
So I think direct to consumer utility and benefit, mm-hmm. right? The normal person walking right. down the street, I think the most utility that they're going to see from brands is going to be in learning more about who you are and being able to provide more contextual responses to that thing. AI is a larger thing. Most of probably the mm-hmm. benefit in AI is going in to be in large scale trucking and warehousing infrastructure, anomaly detection, because all of those things don't necessarily rely on a human interaction. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to spend a lot of time thinking about how the things interact. Mm-hmm. You can focus just on the data set, the learning, mm-hmm. the feedback loop. So I would say if you were to try to like pie the world mm-hmm. and say what percentage, I would say mm-hmm. probably 80% of the value creation in AI is going to be in B2B or large scale infrastructure, and about 20% in customer value creation. Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, the 20% is going to happen in places like customer service, where there's a lot of cost for the business, so they're very incentivized to mm-hmm. to make the experience better. Customers don't like, for example, sitting on the phone with someone for mm-hmm. 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of kind of symbiotic relationship between brand investment and customer needs that will allow for an investment strategy everywhere from inside of brands to venture capital. If you look at a lot of where the AI money is going from a VC perspective, it's either in large infrastructure or core, like customer-focused mm-hmm. needs, like a customer service mm-hmm. interaction.
So for you, what does that mean? I mean, you have projects you're looking at for this year, next year, 3 years down the road. What about like a little bit beyond that? What are the things you think will actually be functional in, 3 to 5 years?
3 to 5 years.
Maybe that's too far out.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think for us, because of our interaction with the home, mm-hmm. right? We run fiber right into your home. Right. We have a tremendous amount of intelligence of what happens on the network in your home. Varying degrees of information that our customers have. We've earned the right with our customers to use to provide a better experience or to provide more utility. What I think is going to be key for Verizon, specifically Fios, in the future is how that intelligence gets better as homes become smarter and how that will improve your utility over time, right? Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to see a future where everything in your home is connected. They all speak to each other. They're running on a fiber network, so it's very clear, secure, mm-hmm. and fast.
That secure word, we'll have to get back to that. Because everyone worries about that.
And you constantly are leaning into to that experience being mm-hmm. better. I think there's a lot of thought out there that you're just going to have a world full of a bunch of personal assistants. Mm-hmm. I actually think that the personal assistant space is going to be crowded in the next 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. And if you imagine the kind of app atrophy or app kind of clutter that we've experienced on smartphones, mm-hmm. you're going to see that same thing with personal assistants, whether it's Alexa or Siri or 40 mm-hmm. other mm-hmm. things that you will have to invoke with a wake word to make that thing happen. Mm-hmm. And then what will happen is like everything else. And then if we talk about 5 years out, mm-hmm. that'll happen 2-3 years out, and then it'll converge back to a couple key players mm-hmm. and we'll get it right. And when I say awesome. We'll get it right, I mean all the players in the mm-hmm. space will get it right and kind of get it down to a place where it's really useful for humans going forward.
So that's interesting. Let's talk about that security issue, though, because if a place like Equifax can't keep information secure, people are going to be worried about someone hacking their home. And if all of this information about them is essentially in one place, whereas now it's kind of distributed, it's bad enough if they hack into one thing. But what kind of assurances can there be, with the kind of hacks that we've seen?
Yeah, and I think I won't speak to what Equifax is doing, but I can only speak for what Verizon's doing. And we spend one of the things that when I got to Verizon about 2 years ago that I noticed about Verizon is we had a long way to go on pure digital product innovation. So having our digital experiences feel like Google, Facebook, Amazon. But one thing that we do right is network, right? We've been a phone company, we've been an ops company, we've been a network company for a long time, and we constantly get network right. And so if you were to look at where our investment is, we're spending billions of dollars to make sure that smart cities, smart homes, that we have the not only just the network infrastructure for them to make those things fast and work well for you, but to make sure that they're secure over time. It's one of the benefits of fiber, the feedback loop of all the things going on in your home when you connect to Wi-Fi through fiber is tremendous. We're constantly looking at next generation of routers that have deeper securities, IoT, MQTT protocols, all these things that drive session management and overall kind of semantic security inside of your home that sequences the sessions, provides cryptography, that provides anomaly detection, all of these things, so that you can trust us with your data. That is at the forefront of everything we're doing from an engineering perspective.
So from the customer point of view, right, I see, okay, so I can call in, as you can with Nest and that sort of thing, I can call in and change the thermostat on my heater or air conditioner. What other things, what's the benefit to the customer? What are those things that they're going to say, wow, this is useful, this is great, as opposed to just sort of bells and whistles?
Yeah, I think the problem with the smart home market right now, and if you look at the trajectory, it's been relatively flat for the last 5 to 8 years, right? And when someone buys their first smart home device, if they don't get immediate utility out of it, they never buy another one. Mm-hmm. Once they buy 3 to 5, they're more likely to buy 10, and roughly they're on a path to buying 20, which is what we kind
of... So what are these 20 things?
Right. Yeah, so I think most of them are light bulbs, thermostats, security cameras, things that make a single room more useful. Mm-hmm. So what you see is better adoption if I make a room smart first versus making different parts of my house smart, because the total utility of you as a human in that space gets better, right? And so I think that's the key focus. What I think is holding up the smart home market is the standard for management across all these different hardwares. Everyone's kind of trying to figure out what that means, right? Whether it's...
the old VHS beta issue, right?
Right, and you can't manage them all from one place, right? Yeah, and there are a bunch of hubs, right, that that people are trying to play. And I think our opportunity as we ship more and more smart home intelligent internet hub experiences is to drive light management of all of those things so that you have all of your things in one place. And if you need to go deeper with the usability, you can pop out to Nest app or Canary's app and have a deeper experience.
So what will be those things that will please customers, that will excite customers besides the sort of obvious ones?
I think if you spend a lot of time with customers in their home, the things that we do every day are the things that take a lot of time, right? Taking the laundry out of the washer and putting it in the dryer, pushing the toaster down, right? Running the dishwasher. As those, I fundamentally believe that as those appliances become more intelligent, a lot of the human utility will come from more intelligent, dumb devices that we currently have in our house. I'll give you an example, though, and this is kind of the problem with a lot of what's being built today, is, I don't know if you've seen this, but there was a refrigerator that was out about a year ago that would tell you if you were out of milk.
I was going to raise that one, because I thought, is that, do we need that?
Right. So you could ask, well, do we need that? And what I would say is, I don't think we need that, right?
And I would say, do we need that given the security threat that it opens up? Like someone can hack everything in my house just so that I can see if
I need milk or not. Right. Or I could just open the door and see if
That seems like a big risk for not much reward.
Right. So a refrigerator came out about 6 months ago that doesn't do that. But when you tap the door, it makes the door translucent, you could see through and see all the things in there. That's a light incremental innovation that's really great. We've been thinking a lot about this, and I fundamentally believe that if you make something that is something that's dumb, quote unquote, for lack of a better term, right now, more intelligent, you have to keep at the core of what that thing is. So what do people use refrigerators for today? They leave notes for the family, they hang things that are important, right? They tell stories on the refrigerator. That's what most, when you spend time in people's homes, that's what most families use refrigerators for. So why are we trying to build features that don't do that, at least that thing, better than it is today, right? So maybe refrigerators of the future, maybe one of the things they do is tell you if you're out of milk, but that's something you can toggle on and off. Mm-hmm. Maybe the translucent thing is the actually more useful thing so you can see in without having to open a door. Mm-hmm. That takes a kind of like ergonomic like thing out of your life, right? Right. But maybe it's an amazing, rich storytelling hub for your home that allows you to leave notes from your loved ones, that allows you to interact with other parts of your house. Maybe that's the thing that would drive hordes of people to go buy smart refrigerators. And if you take that approach to every single thing in your life, every one of these smart things, it starts to inform how you actually drive value versus building something that's like, okay, now this is connected and it can tell me that I'm out of milk.
So this is going to be just a lot of competition of ideas. And as usual, some will fall by the wayside and some will rise to the top. The cream will rise to the top.
Agreed. Agreed.
Okay. So what else is it that's important to know about where this world is going that we haven't talked about yet here?
That's a large question. I think, and then this is one of the things I was talking about at the conference earlier and something I talked about last night in a fireside chat that I'm passionate about, which is, I think, large brands playing in artificial intelligence have a fundamental responsibility to humans to get this thing right. What I mean by that is we've all gone from talking to each other as humans to, you know, like looking at our phones as we walk down the street. We've all had these things change the way we interact with humanity. The next wave of contextual, personalized, artificial, and highly intelligent cognitive experiences have the potential to push us into a world of way more disassociation with reality, with people, et cetera. So I believe
as this fellow from Facebook has just come out and talked about, right? I guess you could call it the dopamine problem,
right?
The addiction problem it's his opinion, but it's something people are talking about. Is that the kind of thing you're referring to?
I do. I think artificial intelligence has the potential to push that thing over the edge for us as a people. Mm-hmm. And so brands, anyone playing in this space, whether you're just a one-off engineer or inside of a very large tech company, we have to figure out what's that line where we drive great value for humanity, but also don't influence these things in a negative way.
So this is very interesting because a lot of the big companies, I shouldn't say a lot, but certainly I would say my observation would be about Facebook so far is that, we're just a platform. You know, we don't need to think about those kinds of issues. You're taking a different position.
I disagree. I fundamentally disagree with that. I think if large percentages of the world interact with you as a brand and get large sets of information, as in Facebook, for example, 61% of Americans get their news from Facebook. They trust the things that their friends post. Mm-hmm. And us for large sets of consumers on our network, right, doing a lot of things. We have a responsibility as a brand to build great things for them that drive value in their lives, but also we have a responsibility to make sure that we are doing what's right for the future of how our children interact with technology. And
can you just go in a little bit deeper into what doing it right looks like?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of things that brands could do that would drive a lot of cost out of the business, drive a lot of revenue into the business based on personal information that would drive sets of behaviors from customers that maybe aren't the right thing to do. And I think the example I would give you is, given the technology today and the pathway that we're on, we could probably fully automate our entire business. And there are a lot of brands that will do that. As Moore's Law, as technology reaches to zero in the next 3 to 5 years, some of this basic AI automation will just be a free open source tool that you can use.
Robots taking over.
Right, and just like Squarespace has done with building websites, right? Mm-hmm. 15 years ago, building a website was like, you need $100,000 and like it was a huge thing. Right. You can go to Squarespace and get a free one, right? And then obviously you can pay up to do that thing. AI is gonna be no different. Mm-hmm. But I think we have a responsibility to keep the human touch in a lot of these experiences for the better good of both the experience and humanity. You could also argue a different angle, which is it's actually a better competitive advantage to have human touch in a world of full automation. So if you imagine a world where we're all walking around, not actually talking to each other, and interacting with all the brands and content and music and all these things that we like, but completely through whatever device, and maybe it's just everywhere, right? Maybe you can just walk up to everything and that they know it's you, and, and then maybe human touch is the differentiator in that world. And maybe it's also contributing to a containment of lack of disassociation with the world. And I think there's often a lot of futurists that talk about this moment in time that could possibly happen where large groups of people pull them unplug, right? They pull themselves away from the matrix, for lack of a better term. I don't know if that thing will happen at scale as much as people want it to, but I do think if brands get this thing wrong, it definitely will happen, right? And so how do you do that work? I think something just perfectly simple that I've done that is, has changed the way I interact with technology. I don't have any notifications on my phone anymore. I've turned all notifications off because I travel all the time, is thousands of emails. Everything, this thing was driving my life. And as I've turned notifications off, I've reclaimed my time. And that's I'm the person in the tech thinking about this. And I've said, you know, I'm not going to have these notifications. I have one or two things for emergencies with family members, et cetera, that come to the to my home screen. But everything else, I decide to go
with. Essentially, I've read about a couple of other people prominent in the tech world that have done something similar. So that's really interesting. Do you think, you know, you talked about these apps that will, you know, through personal assistants and all that will be competing, and then eventually, you know, you'll hit, they'll come back together and a few will succeed, and that those will be the ones everyone wants to use. Do you think that companies are going to compete on this? You know, what you're talking about, the way that you would like to see things go versus, you know, the completely data-driven way to go where we don't take any of these moral ethical issues, because that's really what you're talking about. We don't take them into consideration. You're saying being on the right side of those will also be good business, but others will maybe choose to say the opposite, right? So do you think that will become a big point of competition between companies, even the big ones?
I do, and because if you think about what Tom's Shoes has done, right? There was a big period of time where there was a delineation between for-profit companies and non-for-profit companies. And then Tom's Shoes came in and said, hey, we're a hybrid. If you buy a shoe from us, we'll give it to someone else, right? Mm-hmm. And millennials love that because there's a sense of social good in the millennial generation, right? If you look at what Generation Z expects from brands, they expect utility in return, not just a better experience, that's table stakes, utility in return for what they view as currency, which is their data, right? So if you're not very clear on what the utility is that you're driving from them, don't even, like, you're not even going to get a shot at my data, right? And as there are a whole host of startups thinking about what does it mean to de-enroll your data from entire brands? What does it mean to say, hey, Google, you no longer have, or hey, Verizon, you no longer have the rights to my data because you've done something that I don't stand by. And so now I'm going to pull my identity away from your platform. There's nothing to suggest that that won't become a thing that empowers individual humans. So then in that world, what's your differentiation? It's probably, okay, get data rights and privacy, all this stuff, table stakes. But then what's your differentiator in the world? What makes you a better company, a better, and it doesn't have to be social good, it should be, right? But it just has to be how you approach the world and then how your users feel about that. And I'm not sure the next generation is as concerned with privacy as privacy proper as we think about it. Millennials certainly, and every generation before that. I think Generation Z just says, look, my mobile telephone number, my address, my email address, these things are, this is currency. So if you think you just get the right to those things for us playing ball, I'm already paying you real currency, right? So why do you get this right to this thing? And the experience economy, the social media revolution, has kind of resorted us to this idea that if the thing is free, then we pay with our attention. But we haven't had the conversation around the data component and what that means. So I think this next generation of consumers is going to blow a lot of these things up, just in fundamentally how they think about the world. They're just more advanced, more thoughtful. They've never grown up in a time without technology. As I was telling in there, I've been in co-creations where a seven-year-old has said, hey, why'd you put the hamburger menu on the right side? Like, your shelf nav should do this thing. And you're like, how do you know these words? You're not even a trained, like, user experience expert, but they... Yeah. This is how they interact with technology, and their knowledge is just far and away superior than any.
That's fascinating. So you're really talking about like a digital consumer boycott that could go viral, so to speak, right?
And it's table stakes, yes. Right? Maybe it's a feature mm-hmm. that you can just opt into. Mm-hmm. And you could say it's a boycott, or you could say at some point it becomes BAU to how you interact or how you connect mm-hmm. into the world, right? Your plug-in moment is now informed. There are a lot of things like this where people are dabbling, ad blockers, all these things. Mm-hmm. But imagine if you actually had control over your identity.
It's so interesting because everything has, for years, has seemed to go on the other way, right? They're just collecting data and we have no control and all that. So, but now you're saying it's like, oh, people may wake up and say, or at least the Generation Z, that this is kind of like my medical records. You know, this is my private stuff, you know, and you don't get it without me having trust in you or me liking the use that you're putting it to.
And to that point, if you look at something like blockchain, mm-hmm. right? If I no longer need you, said bank, mm-hmm. for you and I in this moment to exchange funds, I don't need a third party to validate that mm-hmm. our crypto handshake is good enough for you and I, mm-hmm. then where's the data transfer, mm-hmm. right? Like you and I don't need to transfer data, so... like what happens in that moment. And I think to your point about electronic medical records, there's a lot of really interesting work done in this space because mm-hmm. if you look at infectious disease or oncology, one of the biggest problems in care is not being able to take the most perfect information of your visits across different yes. providers. Right. And so if you had identity management that also encompassed everything in your life, mm-hmm. you could show up with your full medical history in your identity management software, for lack of a better term. There are a lot of different terms that people are using for this, and say, hey, Mr. Provider, I just pushed this thing to you, mm-hmm. and now you have perfect information that I don't have to wait for the fact that, you know, yeah, 5 years of my medical history is in an EMR, right. but the other 15 are in like stacks of paper all around, and we got to scan it in and fax the document to you, something that I know you're not going to read. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of upside in this idea across industries.
Which gets back to a trust issue in the end, right? You're going to hand that over, you need to trust. And I think up until now, we collectively haven't thought about it that much. We just, you know, yeah, it's going over there. That's okay. I mean, some groups do, some groups don't. But you're saying that the up and coming group is much more conscious of that.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was great. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. And you guys give me a call anytime.
For more insight from Knowledge at Wharton, please visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.